but just the want to teach, the want to pass on knowledge and watch kids grow and develop was super important for me. And coaching at U, I got to do all those things.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast, we're joined by Michael Plank, a coach whose path has taken him from grassroots basketball to the Division I level. He started in the AAU circuit before moving into college coaching with stops at Willamette, Casper College, Portland State, CCSF, Washington State, and now where he stands as an assistant coach at the University of San Francisco. At USF, Plank plays a key role in recruiting and development, especially through his strong West Coast connections. In this episode, we discuss what the AAU world taught him early in his career, the three qualities he would look for if he were building his staff as a head coach, and how he uses his background and network to bring in the right players for recruiting to USF. Please welcome to the podcast, Michael Plank. Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. Welcome back, coaches, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Your hosts, as always, Alan Major, Doug Caputo here. Our special guest today, the assistant coach for San Francisco University, Coach Michael Plank. Coach Plank, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, appreciate it, fellas. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome, man. Thank you. We appreciate it.
It's a pleasure, one, to be able to pull your way during your busy season. A lot of things going on, I know, and a lot of things pulling you different ways, but be able to get you here. You have a tremendous background. I know you, as we said before when we hopped on here, hopped in the ranks. You grew from the ranks. You were an AU head coach and a lot of stops in between, but then ultimately being now a Division I assistant. You've had growth in your career. It's something that a lot of coaches out there want to be able to understand. How can they do it, right? That's the question, the golden question that everybody wants to know. How do I do it? But before we even dive into that, just being early in your career, as I said, you were involved in grassroots basketball as the head coach, 17U, Portland EYBL. What did working at the EU level, what did starting at that level and then working your way up, was there anything that you learned looking back on it?
Absolutely. The AU level was where my roots were, because I got into basketball after playing as like a trainer, right? I wanted to train kids, get them better, share knowledge, help them develop on their journey. I actually ended up coaching like a seventh and eighth grade team right after my senior year that had some really good players called the Portland Hoop Kings, Nigel Williams, Goss, Avery Holmes, AJ LePray, some really good players on there. So we won a lot of games, and they made me look like a really good coach early. So I was confident beating up on other seventh and eighth graders. It was good. But just the want to teach, the want to pass on knowledge and watch kids grow and develop was super important for me. And coaching at U, I got to do all those things. And then I just so happened to be on the Nike EYBL circuit. And as soon as I popped up on the EYBL circuit as a head coach, I immediately had a bunch of friends. I'm surprised Coach Major didn't call me, but I immediately had a bunch of friends. I had some players around me. And you end up developing these relationships with coaches along the way. And like I said, helping these young guys on their journeys. It was really good for me, just my development as a coach. We were not very good on the EYBL circuit. It was really humbling. Our first game was against CP3, and Kobe White was on that team. Yeah, we got blitzed. He started off with a technical. My assistant, who is in the NBA now, I'm not going to name names. He forgot to put a number in the book. We got a T. They got 2 points right out of the gate. It was a rocky start, a rocky season, but a lot of growth opportunities. And like I said, got to develop a ton of relationships with a lot of guys and help other guys matriculate the players to their four-year schools, which was super rewarding.
Just to cover myself here, I've been coaching and coaching redshirt for several years before getting here to San Diego. If I didn't reach out to you, that's probably why. But but now I talk about this because I think you just mentioned it, and I want young coaches to hear this specifically. Talk about how coaching at the grassroots level gave you repetitions, right? Just coaching reps in general, and then how it helps you develop your coaching voice. Because now, you know, being in San Francisco, whenever you have to address the team in practice, whether it's a quick point for 30 seconds or it's a film session, right, you know, for an extended period of time, just talk about how being at that level giving you those reps and it gave you the confidence to develop the coaching voice that you have now. Because that's probably the thing that a lot of young coaches struggle with, is just developing their own coaching voice.
Yeah, no, absolutely. As a head coach, you get to orchestrate the practice. You get to run the practice, and you got parents in there. You have obviously the players in there, and you immediately have 24 eyes on you, and you're speaking in front of a group, and you're trying to get everybody on the same accord and working hard. And like I said, you're responsible for the organization and the presentation of it. And so you get those reps, like you said, of speaking to players, and you're trying to get your message across to them and get them to do what you want them to do. And it's not always smooth. There's some pushback. There's some failure. There's some success, everything in between. And so you have to navigate that. Dealing with parents was something that I learned early, and I wasn't quite prepared for it. I thought everybody was going to be happy joy. We could play basketball. But it was a great experience, right? You get to deal with people and talk about solutions and just teach lessons that I had as a player to some of these parents who, their parents going through it for the first time, they have no idea what exactly it's supposed to look like either, as well as the kids. So you just get to talk about your own path and struggles and when the big breakthroughs came and things of that nature. So it's all about teaching and developing and, like I said, finding that voice while you're out there coaching.
Yeah, for sure. Said, man.
That's one of the most difficult things to do as a young coach, is not only, it can be intimidating, right? Like it can be intimidating when you're a young guy, you're with seasoned coaches, especially if you jump into a good program, because now you're sitting here and you're listening to like these good coaches, like the coaches that you're working with. They know what they're talking about. When you try to implement something to them, and hey, what do you think about this? There's times, depending on the head coach and their personality, they could shoot it down and be like, that's a terrible idea. Now, if they're a good coach, a good head coach, and a good person, they'll probably teach you a little bit, talk you through their process to learn a little more. But it can definitely be intimidating trying to get a voice, especially in front of players. If you don't know what you're talking about and you're not 100% sure, they can read that, right? They can get that sense that you don't really know what you're saying over time. So it's definitely intimidating.
Yeah, no, you certainly have to be prepared. And you learn that early when you're not prepared and you're trying to present something that usually doesn't come out as clean as you intended to be. So just being as prepared as possible and learning through your mistakes also. Everybody in here is a coach. Think about all the mistakes we've made in coaching and presenting and even drills. I look back at some stuff like, man, I was screwing that up. There's a lot of different ways to do it. But you just learn through all those mistakes along the way.
Yeah, for sure. And I think when you own them, that kind of adds a little cement to the player relationships. If it's a segment in practice and you come back the next day and say, hey, you know what? I wasn't as clear as I could have been with you guys yesterday. Let's clean that up today. That's my fault.
Absolutely.
It's amazing what that does for the fellows because now we ask them to own their stuff. And so when they see us own our stuff, it makes it more of a partnership as opposed to I coach, you play.
Absolutely. We live in a wide world now also. So, you know, it's a little different. It used to just be coach, you tell them what to do and then they do it. And now, you know, the players want to know why. And if you don't adapt to that and have some conversations and explain and let them voice what they want to do, like you can have some issues. You got to be prepared for that as well. Explain the why and make it make sense and have a conversation about it. And they might have something that enriches what you're trying to do. Just being open-minded. We don't know everything. And I've certainly learned a ton along the way, especially from the players.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, the easiest, or I should say the best way to learn is by making mistakes. And that's the one thing nobody wants to do. Everybody wants to be perfect, right? Nobody wants to drop a play and it not work. But you drop a play and not work, then you realize after a time, okay, maybe I got to change this. So the best way to learn is by making mistakes. I'm not saying to go make mistakes on purpose for everybody, just to clarify. But no, that's a great point. With the stops that you have had, how did these come about? Like you go from one position, so Willamette University to, I know you were at San Fran early on and ultimately kind of circled back and being here again. But then with the other stops, I know you had a handful of spots that you have gone. How did those spots come about? Were a lot of them natural? Were a lot of them were you reaching out to people and saying, hey, I'm looking for a job, I'm looking for a job? And just how did those go from one to the next?
Yeah, it's Willamette, damn it. That's how you remember it.
Willamette. Yeah, okay. Willamette, damn it. Got it.
Wine D3 institution in Salem, Oregon. That I'm a
some
proud
good of. Wine up there. Some good wine being made up there. That's for sure.
Definitely. That's where it comes from. But no, the journey kind of started. I coached at my alma mater. And then I had the opportunity to come to San Francisco as basically a volunteer with Rex Walters. And I did that by knowing an assistant coach who had recruited one of the players that I had coached when he was in seventh grade. And a mentor of mine had talked to me about just being really intentional about what I was looking for. And I tell young guys this all the time is I can't help you in this business if I don't know, hey, I'm looking to be an ops guy somewhere, or I'm looking to get my foot in the door as a GA. If I don't know that, I can't assist you. And some people assume that people know everybody wants to move up in this business. I know guys that would stay ops guys forever, and I know guys that want to stay at the grassroots level. So you have to be intentional about exactly what you're looking for, what you're willing to do, and what those parameters are. Can you go anywhere in the country? You know, or do you need to stay in California for family purposes, whatever it may be? So I just voiced that opinion to a coach, and I ended up coming to visit. That's one thing I tried to do early on is just get a lot of FaceTime, and that was really helpful for me. I just came down on my own dime and asked for 5 minutes with Rex and just told him my story and said I'm interested in helping out, and I'll do it for free. I'll wipe up sweat. I'll fill the water bottles. I'll pack the bus, whatever I need to do. And I didn't hear anything for a while, and 2-3 months later, he circled back and was like, hey, we got that spot, and if you want to come, don't have any money, but come on down. And I packed up the Nissan Sentra, and off I went, and that kind of started the journey.
Yeah, it's funny. Another Rising Coaches podcast alum, by the way, Rex Walters, a friend of ours. Great person, man. Love his energy, his passion for the game. It's you just did or said something that I think a lot of young coaches have to be prepared to do, whether they like it or not. Because the business doesn't always allow you to dictate how you want to do things. And you did, you took a shot. Like that right there, what you talked about coming to San Francisco the first time, like that's taking a shot. Yeah. And you don't know what's on the other side of it. You don't know how the story is maybe going to play out, but every career has got a life of its own. Every stop has a life of its own. And I think Doug and I get questions a lot from young coaches, whether it's at the Final Four at our watch party or things like that. Like, how do you do it? How do you do it? I don't think nobody's ever written a book on how do you do it. You can't go to Barnes & Noble or Amazon and just get a book that says, if you do this, you can make this jump. You do this, you make this jump. Every career has got a life of its own. But I think it's encouraging for young coaches to hear what you just said, is that sometimes you got to find a keyhole. Maybe the opportunity is only the size of a keyhole, but you got to find a way to fit yourself through it and take a shot when you don't know what's on the other side, how it's all going to play out.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely.
So you've been on the West Coast for not all, but majority of your career so far. Talk about just, we'll dive more into the role you're in now with really the recruiting aspect side of things. Like how, as, and we don't have to talk specifically for San Fran, but just in general from previous positions or however you want to dissect it, being on a West Coast side, it helps you because you've been able to, and you've worked in the AU side, so you've been able to relate, you've been able to talk and meet a bunch of different AU coaches, a bunch of different coaches along the West Coast that you probably have gotten relatively close with, and that kind of helps a lot of your recruiting. For coaches who were trying to get more involved, and obviously recruiting is a huge piece. Yes, it's completely changed with NIL and more money being involved with it now, but that's a completely different story. Just talk about like how you've leveraged your network, how you've leveraged your background, the West Coast ties, things like that, that help fit USF. And again, you don't have to talk as USF if you don't wish, but just really building that recruiting aspect, learning how to recruit, using those ties and getting people from that way.
Yeah, I think it's going to happen organically in a sense. The areas that I recruited heavily and I recruit heavily all started with me being in those communities in some way or another, whether it was a volunteer coach, whether I was out there training kids. And so you set up these relationships with people, and you may or may not be in a position of influence, but you're there, you're helping the community, and you're tapped in trying to help people without any intentions. And that's been really helpful for me. Kyle Smith, who I used to work for, told me, you got guys that can recruit everywhere and are okay everywhere, and then you got guys that get really good in a few areas. And I tried to follow that model. I tried to be really tapped into the Northwest. I tried to be really tapped into California and the Bay and LA in particular, and just get really tapped into those areas, so that as players come through there, some of those relationships that you've built over 10, 15 years organically, they can pay dividends. And that's how it works now, is I got a network of guys that I've known that have helped out, or they have helped me out. We have a genuine relationship that when the players come through or somebody's coming up, I'm usually in the know about it, which is just super helpful. You're planting seeds in these different areas and not expecting anything back. Like, it's not a transactional deal. I didn't develop any of these relationships knowing that I was going to be an assistant at the Division I level and they were going to help recruit a player someday. That's not why you do it. It's just let it kind of grow, let it plant it, water it, let it grow. And like I said, those people are going to be the ones that help you down the road anyway. Make sure you just nurture those relationships without any expectation.
Yeah, I'm really glad you said that, man. That's a big one. Is go see a coach when he doesn't have a player, and stop by a school, and maybe if the guy's on his lunch break or something, you're in the area anyway, you know, just stop by the school and say hello and speak to a guy for 15 minutes, ask him how his team's doing. And those types of seed planting missions, they do bring dividends, and sometimes when you least expect it. But I love the fact that you said of doing that without expectation, because transaction is the key word in this landscape that we're in. But you do have to water and put sunshine on these relationships consistently. And so,
yeah, you're dropping jewels now, Coach Major, because that's the secret sauce right there, man. Is when are you helping and around and involved and giving you time when somebody can't offer you anything, right?
There you go.
Maybe they're in a rough patch. I try to do that even with Division I coaches who have issues or show up in the news. Man, I call those guys.
Yes, no doubt.
It gets quiet, and I'm speaking from personal experience. It gets quiet, man.
Oh, yeah.
A little crooked. And so when people are down and out, they're most vulnerable, and they also remember the people that were there to be a foundation for them and support them. When it's just hard when things happen, it's not always comfortable to call and check in on somebody. Some people feel like, oh, I'm going to just leave them alone. But a lot of times it's really valuable to call and check on those people, just let them know you're here, and just voice your support for them.
Yeah, no doubt, man. Now you're preaching, because I literally just walked that road myself. I'm a real-time example of when you're not in this profession, you really get to know who your friends are, and you get to know who your real ones are. And every now and then our phone does need a refresh,
right?
You know, to find out who's in there that's really supposed to be in there. I don't say that in a negative way. It's just healthy to know who's really in your corner, whether you're in this part of this profession or not, or if you're in the profession, like you said, something didn't go well. Nobody knows that more now than Book Richardson, who's, if there's one person that's found out who his friends are over the past several years, it's him. And thankfully he's back in the profession now with a high school job. And I'm glad you said that, because our business we can't hear that enough, can't be reminded of that enough.
It's funny you say Book Richardson. Book Richardson is a guy that I had known on the surface. They were recruiting a player I was involved with back in the day. And when his stuff went down, for sure, I tried to stay tapped in with him. And like I said, I was preaching from experience and just tried to stay tapped in with him. And it just so happens now, man, we just signed a kid that is very close to Book Richardson. And Book Richardson remembered those moments. He remembered those moments. And that was really, I think, healthy during the recruiting process, and really helped San Francisco land the kid who was highly recruited. And a big part of it was that tree that I planted without any expectation ended up bearing fruit and being really helpful, like I said, to University of San Francisco and our program. So that's a really good example. And yeah, he's a great guy. I'm really happy for him.
No doubt.
Tapped in with him as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that right there is a prime example of the industry being so small, right? Like you landing a recruit. And that was what I took a lot of what you said about the recruiting aspect too, was the connections, the knowing the people, they know that they can trust you and they're going to send a kid to you. They're not going to send a kid to somebody they can't trust. And then saying Book Richardson there, Rex Walter, two people, right? I know Mage knows both of them. I know I obviously worked with Rex on here, but just like the industry being so small, if you burn one bridge with a, even just say a high school coach, right? You're recruiting a kid, you burn a bridge, you lie to this kid, the high school coach now looks at you differently. It can completely affect another opportunity and many more. Like that high school coach can know, or excuse me, say you're applying for, I'm just going to pull a hypothetical situation. Say you're applying for a next college position in the area, and that high school coach knows that college coach. He knows you recruited your kids. So he's going to go ask him, how did he recruit? Did he do a good job recruiting your guys? Actually, no, he lied to our kids. He did this, that, and this. And it's now you just burn a bridge. You not only lost a recruit, but now you lost a potential job. And then that word just spreads so quickly. This industry is so small. So that puts everything right there into a big perspective.
That's a tough one too, because as assistants, a lot of times you're doing the recruiting, you're still at the mercy of the head coach. Like the head coach is the decision maker, right? And they're pulling the strings and what they say goes. And the intentions could have been good with the conversations that were being had, and it didn't work out the way it should have or would have. And all arrows are pointing back at you. Mm-hmm. It can be really tough. And that's a good, I think, lesson for coaches. It's just less is more. Just try and be as straight up as possible during the recruiting process. I try to present, yeah, it's going to be great, but it's going to be harder than hard. It could be the hardest thing you have gone through in your life up to that point, just the process of having success at the college level and selling dreams, but also selling reality a little bit too, because everybody goes through it. Doesn't matter how good you are. You look around the country right now, there's not a lot of freshmen playing consistently, you know, and I know that wasn't the talk when they came on their recruiting trip, is, man, you're going to have opportunity to play and things of that nature. It's just being as transparent as you can within reason to, like I said, not set yourself or your head coach up for any type of issues.
Yeah, mm-hmm. For sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, a lot of time those kids know maybe they play with them through the AAU circuit. Maybe they've crossed paths with them. Maybe they're friends with them. And like you're recruiting a kid, that freshman you have, that was promised something. And now you're going to recruit the next kid who's promised something. They're going to talk and be like, oh, yeah, he told me this. I remember I just looked, think of myself as a player. Like they recruited a kid who graduated a year after me and him were best friends. And it obviously, like we talked, and it was all good things. And then we ended up getting him as a recruit, but the recruits are going to talk too. They're all, oh, you're getting recruited to the same spot as me? Oh, yeah, let's talk about this a little bit. Like the word's going to spread. So being transparent, I've seen more than enough kids get promised something, go to a program, and then it's, I got nothing that I was promised. And then your word is, it's out there. No,
yeah, you want to try and stay away from promises, I feel.
I never promise anything unless you can't be 100%.
Yeah, leave it open-ended. This could happen. There's two scenarios here, because that's usually what it is. There's two scenarios.
Yeah, no doubt. Yep. If there's anybody promising, let the boss do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. If he says it, then hey, that's his call. But
let's go.
Yeah. There you go.
Now, I know you were also doing a little bit on the professional side as well. I know you work with the Bucks, the training camp, mini camp, things like that. Staff with the FIBA USA men's national team. I believe that was with Jeff Van Gundy, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct. Yeah.
How did those, so being from the AAU side, being a Division I assistant, seeing the NBA side, did those experiences like influence anything? Did they help you in any way? And really just how did like some opportunities like that come about? Because I feel like that running a training camp, running a mini camp, although it's not a full-time assistant from my understanding, at least you got your foot in the door and get the opportunity to be in front of those coaches. Like how did those come about and did those teach you anything?
Absolutely, yeah. It was really organic. I coached a kid whose dad was an assistant coach with the Milwaukee Bucks. And Coach Major just said, after the kid played for me, he ended up signing to Gonzaga. The dad was like, hey, man, I really appreciate it. What can I do to help you? And I just shot my shot. I said, man, I'd love to be around the NBA or go check some things out or be a part of whatever I can be a part of. He said, let me make a call. And so he got my foot in the door to come out and work a free agent mini camp in Milwaukee with the Bucks. And it was, people always ask about the NBA, that having experienced it. And I could just tell them, like, when I got there, it was way better than anybody could expect. Like the resources, the players, the facilities, just everything was incredible. But it was really helpful for me, because being around it and seeing it, and I recommend this for any young coaches, is to go see, try and find a way to get your foot in the door to go watch a practice or be involved in something at the highest level, because what it's going to do is it's going to show you, like, it's attainable. Like, you're going to watch these other coaches, you're going to see these other coaches, and you're going to see and think, I can do that. And that's how the Division I journey started for me. I went to a Step Up symposium with Felicia Hall Allen. It was in Dallas. They do it on the women's side, and it's a huge production. And then the men's side is growing. But I went there, and I got to see the likes of Dwayne Stevens, Rob Lanier, Tony Pujol, all these really great coaches. And I got to be around those guys, and I ended up actually going and seeing them at their respective spots. They were all assistants at the time, all head coaches now. But I just saw it, and I thought, being around those guys, like, man, I can do this. So it gives you this confidence to continue to pursue and continue to find a way in. It's never a linear path. It's not going to be that. It's going to be some bumps and bruises along the way. If it's something you really want, you figure out a way to navigate and pursue any and all challenges that come your way.
Yeah, no doubt, man. I went to watch the Clippers here in early October, and I can just echo what you said, man. It's not only does it encourage you to, like, hey, maybe I could do this, but just watching those guys teach, it makes you such a better, it just jumpstarts your ability to communicate. I think when you hear it, maybe could be a terminology, a phrase, something that's said, the way something is relayed to a superstar, the ways of holding guys accountable. And sometimes people always say holding guys accountable, it doesn't always have to be a volume thing. Like, it doesn't have to be a verbal blowout, because those guys are masters at keeping guys accountable at the same level of tone that you and me and Doug are talking at right now. But they just have the ability to teach on the fly, I think, is really special, because they get their practices. Once their practices start moving, and I like to use the phrase that they coach fast, but they teach slow. Right. And meaning when they're getting up and down, and they make a point, they get in and get out of it. But then you can always tell if a guy gets subbed out, they're going to take the time and take that guy through something. But it's such a, I agree with you. If you're a young coach out there and you get the chance, do what you got to do. Cause it helps you become a better teacher watching those guys.
You got to be really efficient with your time. They don't get a lot of time with their segments. They have to be efficient and they have to be clear, and keeping the players' attention span when they're used to practicing for really 30, 45 minutes a lot of times during the season is a little different than the 2-3 hours that we're going, huh, Coach?
No, you're right. No, those are glorified shoot-arounds. Their practices. Their practices in season literally become glorified shoot-arounds. And if they're out there for an hour or hour and a half, that's a long time for them. And no, you're right. It's you got a chicken nugget, your information, for sure.
Yeah. You got to make the most of the time you're out there. That is honestly one of the hardest parts, is because, like you said, you get a 12-minute segment. Say as an assistant, you get a 12-minute segment to talk about, I don't know, we'll just say defense, right? You want to put in 1,000 things, and you have your first game, especially from the D3 perspective, you have your first game. You don't have long to go over anything, and you got to implement a ton of different things. You don't have the summer to go over it. And it's like, how do you implement all this? How do you talk on 100 different points? You got to go over fundamentals of getting through a screen and all this stuff for maybe the new guys who aren't familiar with how you do it. There's 1,000 things you got to go over, and you only have a 12-minute segment. So you really got to find out, what are the most important points to you? What do we want to break down? This is and then nitpick later on as you go. That's a great way to put it.
Yeah, oftentimes less is more, but I would say it really depends on your group too. Like, being conscientious of what your group can retain. And like you said, if you have these 12 things, because we all have 12 things when it's time to teach, it's a list, right? If they can only remember two, what are those two you want them to retain and have? And if you can dummy it down that way, you can probably be a little bit more effective with your time often.
Coach, what we'll do is, we actually started a new segment we call the Hot Seat Questions. And what that really is, ultimately, just if you were going for a head coach, quote unquote, head coach position right now, or just another position, just questions, base level questions, just nothing too extreme. I don't want to make it sound like we're going to be shooting these really tough questions at you, but more or less just to let people get an idea of the interview process, to let them see, because we get a ton of questions about the interview process, a ton about, and a lot of times coaches don't have to interview, right? For the most part. But when you do, people get nervous about those opportunities. So these questions are more tailored as to what that might look like and to let people see the coach's real-time answers and give them an idea. We talk about, we just said about having to listen to a coach's voice and learn from a coach's voice. This is a prime example. Just jumping into it, how I said about being a head coach, if you say you were a head coach tomorrow, you had to start and just jump into a program, what three qualities would you prioritize in building around your staff? So you have to build your staff right now. What three qualities would you look to implement or have those coaches have?
Yeah, really good question, because staffs oftentimes are just so vital to the success of the program. The head coaches get the credit and the blame for everything, obviously, but the lifeblood a lot of times is the staff and the support staff. For a staff that I got to put together, I got to pick, it'd be super important to have integrity. I don't think I'd be somebody that would manage people's time. I have a family now. I have four daughters, and we got a lot going on. I want guys that are going to, man, just work their butt off. I'm not going to have to, hey, I need you to be in the office more. I need you to take care of this. I work for Kyle Smith and Todd Golden. They both were, man, handle your stuff. Keep stuff off my desk. Handle your business. Be expected to. I had a lead in recruiting at the time and have guys ready in the spring and handle your business. Keep stuff off my desk. Aside from that, do what you got to do. Come in at a respectable hour. Leave when you need to leave. I'm not going to manage your time. And to me, those are awesome guys to work for, because they let you work and they trust you to work, and then you got to work. So integrity, doing the right things is huge. There's so much on the line with all these programs now. There's so much money and voices flying around. You got to have a lot of integrity behind you. And then people who are just workers, like relentless workers. Like, I'd probably hire guys who had operations and support staff backgrounds, just because when you're on that op side and you've done that thing, man, you've been put under the fire, so to speak, and you've probably done a little bit of everything. You've set the buses up, you've done the laundry, you've wiped the floor, and when you've done those things, you're humble enough to understand how the lack of glory that is in that. I think having a support staff operations background is going to be really important. And then there's a certain amount of trust. You got to hire people that you trust to talk to the kids for you, talk to parents for you. Every single support staff and staff member is a voice for you. Knowing what those conversations are going to be like and trusting that I know what this guy will say in the situations that I'm currently in now as an assistant is going to be really important. And integrity and having kind of a support staff mindset, even whether you're a lead assistant or whatever it may be, is really important. And then a certain amount of trust, where I can trust that I know the conversations and responses you're going to be having.
Good ones there. Trust, solid.
Integrity and workers. That's all you need right there, right? That's all you need. Someone who's going to put the work in and rely on.
No doubt.
Yeah. Win it all.
Never stop grinding like a GA, man.
Right.
That's the bottom line. No matter what level you're at, what role you got, grind like a GA.
Sure.
I am going to completely botch the line, but Al, I just completely thought of a J. Cole quote. I forget what song it is, so I'm going to completely botch this. People are going to probably roll their eyes. But I know you're big on J. Cole, so obviously he had a line. What was it? It was like, I'm drawing a blank on it. It was basically like, I'm more hungry than all of the rooks being in the industry. I'm more hungry. I forget exactly. I'm going to have to look up what that quote is now, but it was like,
yeah,
I'm more hungry.
It had to do with being a vet. But grinding like a rookie,
and I'm more hungry than all the other rooks out there right now. And I've been in it for so long. Like, it's just, it's immediately what I thought of.
I work for a guy like that now, Coach Gerlison. Man, Coach Gerlison works like he's a GA trying to get into the business. His preparations like that, and the time he puts in is like that. That's what makes him good, and he's really good. One of the best coaches I've been around, and it's because he works like J. Cole said.
Yeah. So I have one more question. It's just really looking on the legacy you have already had, but then how you want to leave. So like, people reflect on your legacy 20, 30 years from now, right? You're looking back on it and you talk to a former player. Really, what is your perspective, or how do you want that former player to speak about you?
Yeah, really good question. There's the saying that people remember how you make them feel. And to me, that's always really important. I keep things really light. And so I have this goal when I see people, when they see me, man, I want a big smile to come across their face because they either remember something either goofy I did or said with and for them, but something that brought them joy. Even if it was our time together coaching them or them playing for a team I was involved with, whatever it may be, I want a smile and them to remember something positive that we experienced together. So that's just been my legacy. Even if it's they look at me and shake their head because, man, this guy's crazy. At least I got a smile out of them.
Yeah, no, for sure, man. I got that written on my board here. It's funny you use that phrase, but that's a big one because you can have a lot of knowledge, but if people don't feel that you truly care, then you can throw that stuff out the window. Now said, man, this was number one. Thank you again for jumping on here. Doug's about to land the plane here shortly, but obviously not looking forward to seeing you guys here in a couple of months because I know it's going to be a tough couple of games, but because that thing has continued to roll despite coaches that have moved on. That's one of the most well-established programs in the country where you're sitting and deservedly. But no, this was great, man. We really appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, no, thank you guys for having me. I'm fortunate to be in the business, fortunate to be a part of the University of San Francisco, and really grateful for the time.
No doubt. No, we appreciate you being here. Now, I do want to say it was Hall of Famer, hungrier than all the newcomers. That was the quote. I had to look it up. I couldn't sit here and sound like an idiot, so I got to look it up real quick.
You were quiet. Exactly. I knew you was Googling something, man. Yeah. I knew you was Googling something.
I was like, I got to. No, but honestly, genuinely, we do thank you for being on here. I know I probably won't cross paths with you as much as Mage will being in conference, but outside of that, it really is good to be able to just hear your side of things. You drop some great knowledge for people. You've seen the growth and had the growth from one position to the next, so it's definitely going to relate to a lot of people and some young coaches or even older coaches out there. Everybody will be able to relate to that, so thank you very much for being on here.
You got it. Thanks for your time.
Yes, sir. And for everybody out there, thank you for your time, for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Again, Alan Major, Doug Caputo, all you coaches, keep working, keep rising. We'll see you all soon. Have a good rest of your season. We'll talk soon. Take care.
Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.